Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, as always, sitting alongside my colleague, Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, Sunday at noon, first noon kickoff of the 2017 season, actually. Packers-Vikings, U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. Coming up soon, we'll be here before we know it. And as we break down the Vikings today on both sides of the ball, starting with the offensive side, this is not exactly the offense we were thinking that we would see in week six here, because it doesn't look like Sam Bradford is going to be able to play, which means Case Keenum is in at quarterback. And then Minnesota's top draft pick, their second round pick, Dalvin Cook, the rookie running back who was making quite the early impression, out for the season. And it looks like Jerick McKinnon, Latavius Murray, those will be the running backs the Packers have to prepare for. So a little bit different look to the landscape here from maybe what we thought a month and a half ago.
Yeah, Mike, I have several hot takes that I saved specifically for this episode.
All right.
First and foremost, everybody always feels like their team's the most banged up team in the NFL. The Vikings are banged up in a strange way. They are relatively healthy across the board, but at arguably the two most important positions, quarterback and running back, they have big issues right now. Sam Bradford, you and I talked earlier this week with how he looked in that game against the Bears, just didn't look right. And at the time in which we're taping this, we're going to have to see what the outlook is for him this week. But based on, you know, the early reports from Mike Zimmer that he aggravated that knee injury, I'd have a hard time believing that he's going to be playing in this game, which would mean Case Keenum again. And then Dalvin Cook, who's probably been the brightest star for that offense so far this year. They didn't have a first-round pick because of that Bradford trade. They end up taking Cook in the second round, and he lived up to the hype. But now he's not there. So how the Vikings are able to bounce back from this now, they were able to squeak one by a Chicago Bears team that's, you know, kind of going through some rough patches right now. Green Bay Packers are going to be an entirely different equation for them, though.
Yeah, when you look at Minnesota last year compared to this year, obviously the quarterback, the running back situation are different, but so is the situation on the offensive line. And that was really the unit that was the downfall of the Minnesota Vikings last year. That was the unit that that really hurt them in terms of the 5-0 start and falling all the way to 8-8 and not even making the playoffs after being 5-0 at this stage of the season. They went out and spent some big free agent money at offensive tackle to get Riley Reiff from Detroit and Mike Remmers from Carolina. And then in the third round, their second draft pick, because they didn't have a first-round pick due to the Bradford trade, but their second draft pick in the third round, they took Pat Elflein, the center out of Ohio State. So really a revamping of the guys up front. And so far, I think the Vikings like the results, although you'd have to say, I mean, they absolutely had to improve over what they had last year.
They really did. I mean, that really just dismantled their entire offense. You see the foundation, how shaky it was. They weren't really able to get the perimeter weapons going. They struggled to keep, obviously, Sam Bradford comfortable and safe back there. I really like the Reiff signing. I thought that was really smart by them, very savvy, to go out there, bring him in, get what they feel to be, you know, one of the top young left tackles in the game. And you also took him away from the Detroit Lions. So that was a positive, I thought. Remmers, as you mentioned, you know, has been in this league for a while. But Elflein is an interesting one because so often, Mike, we always talk about, you know, these guys that just play one position. Corey Linsley was like that too. And if you go back and redraft that class, he's probably a first or second round pick, maybe even first. So I think people probably should be paying a little bit more attention to these single position centers coming out of Ohio State, because there's a pretty good track record of them now.
Yeah, no question about it. Linsley obviously being a fifth round pick for the Packers out of OSU a few years ago. You look at this quarterback situation, if Case Keenum is indeed the starter, kind of some ups and downs here with Keenum. He did not look good when he first performed against the Pittsburgh Steelers, then had a great game and a victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, then another down game against the Detroit Lions. They only scored 7 points against Detroit on the road and lost a tough 14-7 game when their defense had played pretty darn well. And then Keenum, when he substitutes for Bradford late second quarter, the rest of the Monday night game against the Bears, looks pretty efficient and leads them to some points and a victory there. So hard to know exactly what to expect from Case Keenum, but based on all indications, he certainly gives them a better chance than Bradford on the bad leg right now.
Yeah, and this bleeds into what the hot takes I was talking about, the first one being that quarterback position. Keenum, obviously, as we've talked before, he's not a Pro Bowl-type quarterback, but he is serviceable in this league, and I thought going into that Bears game. I know they probably had a bad taste in their mouth after what happened against the Lions, but I think you have to be smart in trying to make sure that your quarterback is going to be healthy for the long run, assuming there isn't any further structural damage to what Bradford is doing. I think Keenum gives him a chance to be a game manager and to be able to you know, get this thing going. He's an overachiever in the sense of the word of that. He's a former undrafted free agent at 6'1". He's not your traditional height for a quarterback. So there's certain things that, you know, he has to make up for, but I've always felt like he's a pretty decent NFL quarterback. So for them to be turning to him right now, definitely not a walk in the park for the Packers. And in the backfield, made so much about Latavius Murray this offseason.
Yeah.
Before they drafted Delvin Cook, he was their big signing. So many people, Mike, and we're going to talk about the running backs later in the show, always talk to us about, well, why don't they sign this player, that player? And then as it turns out, Jerick McKinnon is the guy that ends up, you know, really taking the ball and running with it in that victory over the Bears. Sometimes it is the younger guy. Sometimes it is the homegrown guy. And I think the Vikings are finding it out that McKinnon might end up being the guy that ends up being the replacement for Cook going forward.
Yeah, and when you look at, again, at the quarterback position, I think that's had an impact on these other offensive weapons for the Vikings. We saw Stephon Diggs have a huge game against the Packers in Minneapolis last year. We saw Adam Thielen have a big game at Lambeau Field against the Packers. These guys are very capable, potentially explosive receivers. If the Vikings get maybe a little more consistency at the quarterback position, they could be pretty dangerous there.
And Kyle Rudolph is as steady as they come. So a lot of weapons there that the Packers are definitely going to have to account for.
Yeah, no doubt about it. With that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. Wes, shifting gears to the defensive side of the ball for the Minnesota Vikings. This is their bread and butter, certainly has been throughout Mike Zimmer's tenure as a head coach. And the two guys that jump out the most to me, and they were the two guys that I thought were the difference makers in the victory over the Bears for Minnesota on Monday night in Chicago, and that's Everson Griffin as a pass rusher, and then Harrison Smith, the safety. At the end of the first half, Griffin gets a strip sack, sets up a field goal. The Vikings go into halftime with a lead they really had no business having, considering how they had played in the first half. And then Harrison Smith gets the interception with a couple minutes to go, and that sets up the game-winning field goal, and the Vikings escape with a three-point victory.
Yeah, and it's funny because it seems like the Packers are starting to go through this stretch now. They're getting some of the league's top best pass rushers and a lot of young talent at that position too. You look at Everson Griffin right now, 6 sacks on the season, 1 in each of the last 3 games. I remember seeing him, and I think it was 2012, 2013, where you started to see him coming on a little bit. You started to see what he offered as a pass rusher, and it's really molded into arguably the best player on that Vikings defense. And that's saying something considering how deep they go. Harrison Smith, since day one, has been a contributor for them. And when you look at the best Mike Zimmer defenses, there's always that all-pro, Pro Bowl-type safety there. He had it in Cincinnati. He's doing it again in Minnesota. I love the way Rick Spielman has built this team. I like the way that Mike Zimmer has brought in guys that fit his system. And through the board, whether it's been through the draft or the free agents, they've largely hit on the guys that they've brought in there. So that's going to be a thing that I think keeps the Vikings in this throughout the season, regardless of what form that offense is taking.
Yeah, I agree with you. You look at some other guys on that defense as well. Danelle Hunter, another pass rusher opposite Everson Griffin. Brian Robeson, a guy who was a starter on that defensive line for a number of years, now is a rotational guy, but a guy that they still like and get production out of him. Then you have Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr at linebacker, some high draft picks that they use there. And then at cornerback, Xavier Rhodes, arguably, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say he's the top cornerback in the NFC or anything, but I think he ranks up there.
He's in that conversation.
He's in that top group of cover corners in the entire NFC, and he'll be a tough matchup, as he always is, for Green Bay.
Yeah, and obviously Trey Waynes has the connections to Wisconsin as well. And certainly from Rhodes' perspective, I mean, you look, 5 interceptions a year ago, and now is really in the prime of his career at 27 years old. Really does fit the prototype of those Minnesota cornerbacks. And really, I think that defense and that secondary really does go as he goes. You've seen at times when he's not out there how much it changes things for them. He really is. I think when you look and you put pound for pound some of the top corners in this conference, in this league, he fits in that equation. And that's kind of in the way of things now. You look at how, you know, a guy like Darius Slay's been coming on with the Detroit Lions. If you're a defense in this division specifically, you need to have guys that are going to be able to match up with Aaron Rodgers and be have guys that you can count on. And then also, credit to him, Terrence Newman's still in this equation as well. Now in, I think, his 18th NFL season, something like that.
You talk about the ageless wonder at a position that you just don't normally see guys that age still out there playing, but certainly a tremendous NFL career for Newman.
Yeah, it's insane. I'm looking that up right now. It's his 15th NFL season. I don't mean to get too far out of my reach there, but 39 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know if Darryl Green's going to have to be watching out for that number age record, whatever it was that he had. But whatever it might be, I think getting back to the point I was making with Rhodes, when he's been on the field, that's when this defense is at its best. You've seen when he's not there how the domino effect it can kind of have with these guys.
No question.
With the pass rush they have, I really like those inside backers, as you were talking about earlier. There's a lot of things the Packers have to take into account in that, you know, the double A-gap blitz system that Zimmer runs. If you look historically, that's been something that's worked against Aaron Rodgers, and I think that played a lot into Rick Spielman's thinking, the Vikings' thinking, when they brought Zimmer in, trying to find ways to defend against the game's best quarterback.
Yeah, and I mentioned those two key turnovers the Vikings had against the Bears on Monday night, which really were difference-making type of plays in that game. But that's one thing that actually has been missing somewhat from this defense this year. In the first four games of the season, Minnesota only had three takeaways on defense. Now they have five after the two big ones against the Bears. But that's something that you always go into a game against a Minnesota defense cognizant of protecting the football. And you wonder if the strip sack and the interception they had against Chicago, is that going to be the start of something where they get back to their takeaway ways, I guess, as I like to say. Because when that Minnesota defense is taking the ball away, I don't care who's playing quarterback or running back, they're going to be a really, really tough team to beat.
Absolutely. And that's also the reason I think, as far as the most intriguing aspect of this game, is really going to be that chess match, because you do have Aaron Rodgers, who's done such an exemplary job of protecting the football these last few weeks and in general throughout his career. And then you have Minnesota and what they do defensively. This is a much different game for them. They're not taking on a rookie quarterback in his first NFL start. They're taking on one of the game's elite, the reigning NFC Offensive Player of the Week. So that's always what it comes down to, that passer rating battle, trying to figure out how this all works out. In the Packers, they have one of the game's best to lead them into this thing.
Absolutely, and with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. Wes, with regards to the Packers, there's going to be a lot of discussion this week, I think, about Green Bay's running game, because obviously we saw the breakout performance from Aaron Jones in Dallas, really over the last game and a half, when you go back to the second half of the Chicago game on the Thursday night. You have Ty Montgomery trying to come back from the broken ribs. Jamal Williams was the number two running back out of the three draft picks. You also have Devontae Mays, who was active for this last game with Montgomery being injured. So a lot of, you know, possibilities here. Where exactly do you see this Packers running game going as we head into this Minnesota game?
When I look at the Packers running game in 2017, Mike, I see a lot of 2013 in it. And what I mean by that is the Packers had James Starks, coming back that year. James Jones also was on the roster, but he ended up being the complimentary back to Eddie Lacy. But the Packers also drafted Jonathan Franklin that year. They went into that draft and they made moves. And I think I see a lot of that in this year's. You had a bona fide back, you had a guy that you trusted in Ty Montgomery, and you drafted three young guys. This is why you do this, because you never know when that starting back is not going to be available. And I think the trap we fall into so many times is talking about, well, who's the number one or who's the number two, who's the starter? Mike McCarthy doesn't care about that on a given week.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you Ben Sermons doesn't care about that. They want to make sure they're not in the position they were last year, which is where they're either promoting guys off the practice squad to start or having to sign guys off the street like they did in 2012 when Ryan Grant came back late in the season. The Packers are deep at that position. I think Aaron Jones having the performance he did proved once again why really specifically at that running back position, I think that's the best policy when you draft guys and you give them an opportunity to learn your system and make an impact.
Yeah, I think when you look at what happened last year, Eddie Lacy goes down, James Starks goes down, you're converting Ty Montgomery from wide receiver to running back. Mike McCarthy and the offensive staff were just rewriting game plans every week, trying to figure out. They were putting game plans together that weren't even necessarily based on things that were repped in training camp in the preseason. It became a completely different look. You're exactly right, Wes. You draft three running backs to have behind Ty Montgomery, so you have injuries, and if guys go down, you have other guys who are filling in, and these offensive coaches don't have to rewrite everything. Right. They don't have to start from ground zero when it comes to what offense are we going to take into this game to try to beat this team that we're playing this week. So the Packers have protected themselves, and obviously it paid huge dividends with what Aaron Jones has done over the last game and a half. And frankly, who knows? Maybe Jamal Williams at some point is going to have that breakout game, or Devontae Mays will. Ty Montgomery may come back and have a 160-yard game like he had against Chicago. A lot of possibilities for this Packers running game. The most important thing is they have options.
Absolutely, and that's a thing I don't think they had in 2012 when they had Cedric Benson and all these other guys go through injuries, and they didn't have it last year after losing Lacy and Starks. Now they're deep there, and if you don't have Ty Montgomery in a given week, you're able to survive.
Yeah, all right, I agree. But before we go to a break, let's take care of a little sponsor business here. Today is a perfect day to fill up with some new Campbell's Chunky Max soup. Chunky Max is loaded with more meat than you can handle, a lot more. We're talking 40% more than a comparable chunky soup. So go on, fill up with new Campbell's Chunky Max soup. Campbell's Chunky Soup, the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, one topic from this past weekend in the NFL we haven't touched on yet, and that's somewhat creative touchdown celebrations that we're seeing in the end zones around NFL stadiums. Now, the league relaxed the rules on celebrations. There's certainly more things now allowed than had been allowed previously. But even just looking at this last week, you had the Packers wide receivers do a little bobsled gig in Dallas, and then the Minnesota Vikings at Soldier Field in Chicago did a little duck-duck-goose circle. I guess they call it duck-duck-gray-duck in Minnesota. But that's a discussion for another day. But maybe next are some unofficial internet judge to give scores on these touchdown celebrations to see just who's making the biggest impact.
Oh, yeah. And there's already websites that are ranking, you know, teams by weeks, you know, based on what celebrations they come up with. I think this was great. I've liked it since the very beginning because I think it's something that puts positive eyes on the league, and it brings a lot of attention to it. You saw Lolo Jones tweeting at the Packers, you know, congratulating them on their celebration, but saying you're missing the fourth bobsledder. it's those kind of things. And the thing that was funny, and I asked Randall Cobb about that after the game because it was such a unique celebration, and he said it was actually, you know, Jordy Nelson is the one that came up with it. I joked about this in Inbox this week. I mean, Jordy Nelson, with all due respect, is the last guy I would expect to be doing that. He's always been the just handshake and give the ball to the ref and go back to the huddle. Yeah. Or, you know, last year, even when he was spiking the football, he mentioned that that's something he was doing. The coaches and his teammates talked to him about doing to get teams, you know, get the guys energized. That wasn't naturally organic.
Right.
But it seems like they're having a great time with it. He had the dunk in week one against Seattle where Randall Cobb made the little hoop for him. So it's those type of things that I think really increase the fun of the game, and obviously now it gives people, I think, even further reason to pay attention to these touchdown celebrations after the, you know, points are scored.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fun as well, don't get me wrong, but I also was a big fan of just the handshake thing. I mean, I thought it was cool.
Good, yeah.
When they would score a touchdown and they would go around and just, you know, shake hands with their teammates. All right, good job. You know, job well done. Let's, you know, we'll get back to work. I kind of like that myself. But and just so people understand as well, There is a point shortly after the touchdown is scored where that 40-second clock for the PAT is rolling. So these guys, they have a lot of freedom with what they can do, but they can't do some 30-second choreographed thing because then you know, their PAT team is going to get a 5-yard delay of game penalty, and that 33-yard extra point is going to become a 38-yard kick instead. So things have to be constrained a little bit from a time perspective, but it's nice to see the NFL, as long as the celebration are classy and nothing is vulgar or inappropriate, the NFL is letting these guys have some fun.
Yeah, it means you also have to have some extra practice time too, going in there and making sure that you know where guys are supposed to be. You think about the touchdown celebration that Davante Adams had against the Bears before, you know, he had that the hit that everybody was talking about. That was a tremendous celebration that he had, where it was basically all the linemen and different players came up and put their trays out, and he was like throwing food on their plate like a lunch line in school.
Was that like Oliver Twist or something?
It must have been. Like, I wonder if that was it.
I wasn't quite sure what that one was all about.
With how somber everything was after the game, I obviously wasn't going to ask anybody that, but it was a very unique celebration. And as you mentioned, with only 40 seconds to work off of, you have to make sure that everybody's in their right spot and you're going to get it done in the appropriate amount of time. As we also saw during the preseason, though, and it's happened a couple times this year, the group celebrations, now more than one person can also take the Lambeau leap after a score.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of things that I think have really expanded that. And if anything, I think it's also helped the referees out, because now they're no longer in a position where they have to make judgment calls on what is, you know, over the top or what's too much.
Yeah, they don't have to watch it.
Yeah.
They don't, you know, it's like they can just get on with the business of spot the ball for the point after touchdown. The clock is running. Let's take care of it.
And so much so that you got, you know, you don't have guys dunking through the uprights and things that could potentially change the game in terms of, you know, the stuff around it. I think it's all fun and games, and it seems like for the most part the Packers have really embraced it, which I think is a cool feature to add, and it obviously gives these guys something to do now after these touchdowns.
Yeah, well, we'll see if the Packers and the Vikings, after what they did last week, if they come up with some more creative ideas to celebrate here and get their fans even more involved. But with that, Wes, we've got to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.